So it took me 20 years to become successful out of 25. The first 20 years, I mean, you are doing everything you can to pull it all together, make it all work, and they're baby steps. I mean, baby steps as you go. After about 20 years, it started to click, and we finally started to have a following large enough to grow and add more models and more stuff. But it's a long road, man. Jumping in and thinking it's going to happen in 3 years or 5 years, it's a dream. I wish you luck.
I think that needs to be said like over and over again with all the Instagram shit now.
Everybody wants things right now.
Instant you're going to come up with a company and you're going to be 10X. You're going to make millions in year two and blah, blah, blah. But we went through the same
stuff. They're not the boat business.
or the car business. Yeah.
Welcome to Oil and Whiskey, an Ironclad original. I am Josh Henning.
I'm Phil Gerber.
I'm Jeremy Gerber.
Welcome to Oil and Whiskey, an Ironclad original. Today's guest is legendary powerboat racer and builder Randy Schism from MTI.
Marine Technology.
Inc. Yep. But first, we've got something new. We're gonna be exploring this idea or segment a little further, but this is our first forte into blind whiskey tasting reviews.
This is to kind of validate the reviews and see if we're completely full of shit, right?
So well, yeah.
Since I don't know what's in this glass.
Correct. I don't know what's in this glass. Phil doesn't know what's in his glass. Well, I've got a guess of what's in Phil's
the
glass.
The fact that the three of us are willing to drink something that...
Alcohol kills most fans, I feel like.
Yeah.
Under normal circumstances, like at lunch, this would never happen.
No.
I wouldn't leave my drink unattended for 5 seconds with you two around.
I show you most of what I put in your drink, though. That's usually like this finger.
You usually do it as you pass it over.
But we're gonna expand on this a little bit more as we go forward and do some more of the blind whiskey tasting. So this is what we're doing for this episode. So basically, all of us hopped out. Each of us poured a glass of something. We kept this in the weeded genre. At least we were supposed to. I don't know if we did or not.
I didn't read the label, but...
Weeded. So, who wants to go first?
What did you choose?
I'm very disappointed this didn't start off with a jingle. If anything needed a jingle, just to kick it off.
Dude, we were all about jingles. You beat it into our head on air and off air.
I'm nervous.
Listeners have no idea what he put us through.
I'm nervous. Just celebrating my victory right now,
I'm nervous to do one now. Like,
I'll never do a jingle.
I wake up in cold sweats in the middle of the night thinking about that I accidentally did a jingle.
We've lost two major sponsors because they wanted us to do a jingle, and we said absolutely not. Phil said no more jingles.
Yeah, but you've gained a shit ton of dignity.
Doesn't matter. We're sellouts. Okay. I don't give a fuck. All right, let's drink some whiskey.
Who's going first?
Are we passing? Pass the whiskey to the left hand side?
This one was sitting in front of me.
Yeah.
I poured that one and put it in front of him.
I poured that one and put it there.
I poured mine and put it here. I was going to give it to one of you guys. Oh,
well, then we could flip-flop.
Okay, then let's swap. You poured this glass.
I poured that glass.
Okay.
All right. Are you sure you poured this glass?
Yeah, I'm sure.
All right.
No, I poured that glass. I poured the glass.
Yes.
All right. This is starting off so good.
I told you it was not good. Yeah.
That's a good thing we don't have a legitimate bourbon sponsor.
Nobody's even drunk yet.
All right. Drink the whiskey.
Oh, so I'm going first.
Fire away, dude.
That's got a good smell. It's got a higher end smell. That's really good.
Tell us what you're feeling in your mouth, Josh. What's going on right now?
I'm feeling that definitely has an age statement.
Okay.
That's at least 10 years.
Oh, you do have something good there.
That's a Weller product, I'm guessing, is what I'm guessing. But I could be wrong. It's good. That's a really good one. That would rank, we're going to fuck this all up, but I would rank that fairly high on the spectrum.
Give it a rank. Hit it with a number so we can compare once we disclose what it is. See how accurate the reviews are.
that's probably a high 90s, low 100 proof.
Okay.
I'm not going to rank it yet. But I think it's a Weller product. I think it's at least 10 years. I think it's high 90s, low 100s proof.
Okay.
Do you want to know what it is? Or do we wait till everybody's done?
Well, let's wait till everybody's done.
Okay. Around the table. Here we go. Smells familiar. Smells like something I've had. Yeah.
I first came from one of those bottles.
Let's see here. It's got some burn, but the taste is certainly not aged. Definitely has some burn. That's north of 100 proof. I like it. I feel like I've drank this and enjoyed it in the past.
It's suspenseful.
Yeah, I got two things I think. I almost know what it might be, maybe. Shot in the dark between the two. We'll
okay. See.
It's a drinker, though. I like it. It's very good. Hot. A little hot.
I'm thinking based off color that mine might be the same one that I poured for you.
I think what you poured me is the same thing that I poured somebody else.
No, I poured mine and stuck it right here.
Yeah, I know. Move it. Well, but this is what you poured, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm saying what you poured tastes very similar to what I think I poured. In my mind. But we could have fucked this whole thing up.
Yeah, this is coming off the fucking rails right now.
This is like the whole point. This is fucking crazy.
This whole thing. Delete it. Never happened.
I drink. All right. See what you get.
It takes me back to a time.
What time?
I don't know. 5 o'clock.
You poured that one, didn't you?
Yeah.
You poured this one?
I was just trying to be pretty well-rounded here, guys. Give you that. I'll put that out there. A little snippet of information.
I'm not quite as descriptive as you guys are, but...
does it suck or is it good?
It's good. Smooth, little bit of chest burn on it afterwards.
Tasting this more, I don't think it's a Weller product.
It's a little cinnamony. Softball there for you.
Cinnamon? That's my dog's middle name. Cinnamon.
We're not going to do numbers ranking, obviously, blind, because it doesn't make sense. We're going to do bad, good, or really good.
You know, I think in the weeded genre, though, they're generally pretty good. I mean,
we enjoy the like weeded. Anytime we go with anything that's a high rye, a bourbon, or a rye, we have always been like
we ain't having none of that up in here.
Right.
Not up in here.
Right. Like a high rye mash bill is generally not something we'd gravitate towards. But
well, let's shall we discuss what do you want to take a crack at
I'm
it.
I'm scared to make a poll. I don't want to put my foot in my mouth after the bourbon. It's good, not great.
Okay.
You're saying all the right things based on what it is. So you're on the right track.
I'm thinking by the color, it's the same thing that I poured for Josh, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I'm at a loss.
I was thinking this was a Weller product at the beginning, but after a little bit more, I'm wondering if it's one of the old elk weededs or double weeded, something like that.
That's what I was thinking here. I was torn between Weller Antique, because it's a little hotter than Special Reserve, or like the double weeded old elk. Well, I'll tell you what that is. That is, you want to take a crack at it, or should I disclose?
You'll let you disclose.
It's the Redemption Weeded, which is, that's right there. It's good. It's not great.
Mm-hmm.
It's a entry level kind of price point. We've all had it, liked it, drink it, but it's
not. Josh also had it, and he really liked it.
Oh, really?
I liked it. I really did. I was thinking it was something else when I first, but then towards the end. I have no problem ranking this probably close to wherever we ranked it the first time.
He's solid.
But no, there was I really did enjoy it on first thing. It's very Weller like. It's definitely wheat forward. I enjoyed the taste.
That leaves
one of my go tos that you can find in the store. Between that and Old Elk are kind of the when you want something unique.
So that's what you poured as well.
That's what I poured.
Both of y'all poured the same thing. Apparently, what do you think?
I threw my two guesses out there. I'm willing to put my foot in my mouth. Sound like a complete asshole.
No, you're close into it. Some of the descriptions are probably a little off, but you said Weller and stuff, and it was Weller 12 year.
Huh. That's funny, dude.
It is funny. That's the point of
doing this.
Well,
you don't know
this.
Because I generally really, really
I know.
Like Weller 12.
I know.
So it had a little age.
When I was
like
first
50%
taste,
of the way there.
When I first tasted this, I thought this was Weller 12.
I first just tasted for the it, weed. And I said, this Coke tastes like Pepsi. That's what I said.
I don't think there's anything wrong with any of this. I think it's funny how, I mean, this what is a label. Learning experience because taste, I mean, people have talked about this for years in the bourbon world, is your taste always changes when you know what you're drinking.
Well, the pedigree, too. And when you see that black label with the 12 underneath it.
Especially if you paid for it.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, if you went and bought that bottle and you're sitting down, very rarely do you spend good money on a bottle and you're like, ugh. It's always like you convince yourself that you like it. Some stuff obviously is always good, but I think this is going to be a learning experience.
Well, now that I know what it is, I'm going to enjoy the rest of it.
I completely was different on you. I really enjoyed this a lot.
I normally really do, but I just ate a bunch of honey roasted cashews. I got a lot of sweet flavor in my mouth.
It was perfect to do before a blind tasting.
You fucked your palate.
Taste in my mouth. That was a lot darker, you could tell. That's the one thing about this. The Redemption is always very light on the color.
See, I had a little sliver of lemon gelato before I came into... Cleanse my palate.
I think it's supposed to be sorbet.
Is it?
Yeah,
that's what I said. Sorbet.
No, you fucked it up. You got gelato. Of course you didn't have a good palate. World champion powerboat racer and MTI founder, Randy Schism, welcome to Oil and Whiskey.
Welcome, and cheers. Randy has come prepared. We took a little break for him to pour himself a glass of Blanton's. So
Blanton's.
Nicely done. Good choice.
A distinguished gentleman, you can tell, by the choice of bourbon.
So
there you go.
Yeah, you got to be prepared for a podcast here with a bunch of car guys talking to you about boats. So probably a first for you. I'm sure you're, you know, a guy of your stature and your accomplishments in the industry, and big fans of yours, believe it or not, though. We're we are boaters, Phil and myself. And we met you a few years back. I don't know if you recall with Scott Rosenbach. So
I do. That was great.
At Miami Boat Show, and always admired what you've done. I know a little bit about your story and was very interested in hearing more. So we've had a lot of interesting people on the podcast. You're the first boat guy. So welcome. And we thank you for taking the time to talk with some car dudes.
I love it, man. Glad to be here.
Well, kind of take us back a little bit to the beginning. I'm sure you've probably told the story 100 times in your world and your audience, and our audience is going to be a new story to some. So, you know, how'd this big ball get to rolling?
So I did a little boating when I was younger, and I was always hooked on boating. We got the opportunity to do a couple of boats, and it really kind of takes off when I got the opportunity to go to Dubai, and Victory Team was the company over there, and they invited us over to do a race with them. I went over, I hit it off with those guys. It was supposed to be 2 weeks. I didn't have a clue what I was getting into, but it was really cool over there. We hit it off. They asked me to stay. I didn't really know if I was ready to stay there or not, but we made a deal. It all worked out, and it lasted 10 years, and we won lots of world championships and lots of national championships. And we had, we would travel to the races, and I would have 60 plus people with us, between caterers and mechanics and throttlemen and drivers and the press and what have you. And for 10 years, we pretty much dominated everything in the Middle East and Europe. And it was the most successful offshore team that I know of ever.
Damn.
Wow.
So when you're they reach out to you from Dubai and they bring you over there, what are you coming into? Is this like, is there a hole? Is there a concept? Is there a class? Or is it like, here's a big warehouse and here's a bunch of fiberglass. Here's a computer. Get to work.
There you go. The UIM is the sanctioning body over there. The Dubai Marine Club was the local club. And they had purchased boats from Skater and other manufacturers. And they had boats there. They purchased one that I had, and they air freighted it over. So I knew they were pretty serious about it. And when I went over there, I was like, I couldn't believe it, man. I'm pinching myself. These guys are, sorry about that. So anyway, I went over there and I couldn't believe it. They were going to pay me to race. And I had done everything I could do to go racing on my dime. And, you know, it's a struggle to go racing. It's a lot of money, but for those guys, it was a hobby. And it was really cool because they wanted to get involved. And it started with some boats they had purchased. Then we started manufacturing them. They wanted a full deal. So we built a shop. We had engine dynos, we had valve machines, we had cranes to lift the boats off. We started building our own boats, and it just took off, and it was extremely successful. And like I say, I had lots of full-time employees over there, 60 plus just employees. At the peak, we started off with a couple of boats, and we ended up with, I think, 13 was the most we ever had at any event, but in all the different classes. And it was nice because our boss, the Sheikh, he wanted to do everything, whatever it took. He was game. He would try it. And so it made it really interesting for us and for them too. And they said it was their way to market the country through sports. And they definitely did that.
What year was that when you first went over?
1989.
I would have to imagine, I mean, with Dubai's, you know, massive explosion, economically wise and tourist wise, how different was the landscape in 1989 going to Dubai than it is, you know, today?
Oh, it's quite different. It started off, I mean, they were already rolling, but it started off and it just grew and grew and grew and it's still growing. I mean, it's amazing over there. I haven't been there in a couple of years now, but every time I go back, I can't believe how much it's changed. It just literally exploded.
How many months out of the year did you live in Dubai for those 10 years?
So it was 8 months a year, 5 months a year I was off. So everybody takes off in the summertime. Nobody's there, you know. I mean, locals are staying, but if they can, they leave. When it's just too warm. But the rest of the year, it's great over there. Man, we had a really good time, and it was quite the attraction, and we got to travel them a little bit and go do some of the horse race stuff with them. And they said the cool thing about boat racing, it was so inexpensive.
I've never heard anybody say that.
It's all about levels. Well, all about levels.
When you race horses, it's a different level. Huh. And they had lots and lots of horses. So by their standards, this was small, but for us, it was huge.
And still one horsepower per horse, right?
Still, yeah.
And all they had to gain out of this was strictly putting them on the map to make them look like a competitor amongst what, the United States and UK or
everybody. It was their window to the world. You know, the sports community and the advertising, the magazines, the press they got. You can't buy that. So for them, it was a strategic move. They've done it with horses. They've done it with boats. They've done it with golf, and it's paid off. I mean, they are well renowned and have been for a long time.
I mean, I hate to harp on this, but going back to it, I mean, today in the last 15 years or whatever, you know, it's become a thing. You know, you got celebrities there, you got people that have houses, there's businesses based there, there's stuff like that. So we've become a little bit more numb to it. But in 1989, I mean,
it's before it was cool.
Well, that's like James Bond level shit. I mean, living 8 months into it, was there a point in time? Obviously, you said you you couldn't believe it. You wanted to pinch yourself. What was that moment where you were kind of like, "Holy shit!" Like, I hope they don't find out what I'm doing. Like, because it had to be amazing.
It was incredible, and the stories we could talk about are insane. But yeah, when I went over there and they convinced me to stay and you know, we arranged everything and made our commitments, and it was great. And I was just thrilled to death, man. I'm a guy from the Midwest with Midwest upbringing, and it was incredible. You know, it was so, so incredible over there. The town was growing. Everything was going crazy. Boat racers were treated like sports guys here, like a baseball player or something. I mean, everybody knew who you were. You were on TV. Everybody knew it. And it was just such a cool place to live and such a cool environment. And the boss that I had, Sheikh Mana, he was amazing. And if you came up with an idea, he'd say, yes, let's try it. Let's do it. And they really, you know, just let you run wild and try everything you wanted. And we learned so much so fast. And we figured out how to settle the boats down. You know, a lot of them, especially in the catamaran racing side, were really flighty. And I don't know if everybody understands it, but I mean, basically they're running on a wing and a prayer at that point. We kept lowering them and setting them down and making them handle better. And they got faster and faster lap times. And, you know, we were putting guys in boats with zero racing experience. Now they've been on the water forever. They've got fishing boats. They've been around it. But as far as racing goes, it was a brand new thing to those guys. And they were learning really fast and doing a great job. And our plan was to go over there for a few years, get them up to speed, turn it over to locals, and they would run it from there. And it just lasted a little longer than we expected. And but they took over and they've been very successful ever since. And those guys are as good a racer, as good a boat builder as anybody in the world. I mean, they know what they're doing and they're very competitive. They've kind of backed off a little bit now, but when they were running, they were the class to beat.
Are they doing any pleasure boats or race boats today, or are they still kicking, doing anything? Or
they do a little bit of a X-Cat stuff, but not too much anymore. And I think they build a few pleasure boats, but again, it's not their primary concern anymore. So, but yeah, we went through a lot of different things and built the shops and it was an amazing time over there.
So what got you thinking? Was something there that just like came to an end? Did the time expire? Was it just time to come back home? What brought you back to the States to start doing what you do now?
So it was great. We, like I said, we had a long run, but the powers that be changed over there. There was a shift in power in the government, and the guys that I was with kind of stepped away and some other gentlemen took over and things changed a little bit. And I had a great run and the kids were about to start school. And we said, you know, this is a great time for us to go back and, you know, raise the kids as we would here. And so it just worked out perfect for us. And I flew back and forth for two more years and helped them. And then when it was all done, it was a win-win for us. And I hope it was a win-win for them.
So how soon did the thoughts or the wheels start turning through that transition of starting your own place, of doing your own thing?
So we had talked about it. I had a couple of guys that had worked for me over there and they'd come over and stayed for several years and they moved back to the States. And so we actually started building boats up in Green Bay, Wisconsin, one of the guys that worked for me for years over there. And I still went back and forth and helped those guys. And then when I got back here, we went ahead and started full time, started building boats here. And because I knew so many people, the first boats we were building were pleasure boats and race boats and probably more race boats than pleasure boats. And now it's exactly the opposite. The race boats have gotten us to where we are, but we do a few race boats a year, but not a lot. Most of our boats are the pleasure boat, both catamaran style and center consoles. They have become super popular.
Yeah, the center console thing, that exploded. And what year did you start doing that? Because the center console thing was weird. It came on so strong. And then in the recession, it like seems like it weeded out like 95% of
the guys that shouldn't have been doing it.
Yeah, I guess. You know, when did you start putting center consoles together?
I think it was about 7 years ago we started. And okay. Our first boat was a 42. and everybody told me it was going to be too big. It wouldn't run, and it runs phenomenal. It is now our smallest center console, and we go up to a 50 and then all the way up to a 57. But from a performance standpoint, they run like nothing else. It's amazing, man. We've got a patent on the hull design and the bottom on this thing. It's so user-friendly, man. Anybody can drive it. It's got manners like you wouldn't believe. And it's still a really high-end performance center console. So it's not your dad's fishing boat anymore.
Yeah.
Are you guys going to get into the race pleasure V-holes at all? Or do you think the center console kind of covers everything that you would want with the power, speed, and all the room in there?
So our cats are kind of our high performance side, and the center console is kind of the luxury side. And so I think the performance V bottom, there's a few guys still out there that are building those, and that's kind of a different market, but I don't think we're going to go into that one. I think we're real happy with our niche we're in and our clientele we've got, and we cater to them basically.
Seems like it'd be hard to go back on the mile an hour when you've got boats that are doing like, you know, pleasure boats doing like 150 something miles an hour. And then you're going to go put a V hole together to try to like crack 115. That's dangerous as hell. is that, so, but well, maybe the deciding factor, like just too damn slow. Fuck a V hole. You know?
I'm going to take the fifth on that.
Okay. But the center consoles are, man, amazing. Such unbelievable fit and finish, and the attention to detail of what you've got. It's so obvious when you see it at the boat show. When those boats are out of the water, it instantly, you know, it's something different. It's like such a well-built, well-engineered product. And I think your industry is probably a lot like ours. There's a lot of, you got some great players in the industry, but you get some that maybe like aren't so much. So just, man, you look at that boat, it is top of the line. Like, even if you're not a avid boater, a fabricator, a machinist, anybody who knows anything about physical, tangible items,
right?
That, man, hats off to you, because you look at them and you know this is a high end piece of equipment.
Well, I sure appreciate it. You know, we put more time and effort in than anybody in the boating industry, and it takes longer, but the end result to us is worth it, and to our clients, it's worth it. You know, it is, in our opinion, the nicest one you can buy. Performance and finish, not one or the other.
Oh, you've succeeded in that. I mean, obviously, I'm not a boat guy. I haven't grown up around them like you have. Being around you guys as long as I have, I've been around, you know, so a lot of boats in the last, you know, 6-7 years, whatever. And I was always amazed at being around stuff and all that. And you're looking at it, you're like, man, it costs that much money, and this is like fucked up on the edge, and this is like peeling and stuff, and so
they finish when you open the hatch.
And then, yeah, you're looking at it, you're like, man, that's a lot of money for coming from the car industry, right? And knowing what we do, you know, inside, outside details and stuff. And then being around Scott and being on his boat, you know, several MTIs, and you look at stuff and like, oh, so it can be done. Oh, yeah. There's just, you gotta have the right company to do it the right way. I got you. And that was an eye opener to me, because I hadn't been around it. And you know, till then.
We've always looked at so many of these boats, and they're kind of like almost kit car-ish.
Yep.
And then, like, yeah, coming from the level that we take cars to and how, you know, insane we get in all the details and machine parts and color matching things and finishing the backside of panels and then the upholstery and the fit and finish everywhere. And then we got into one of your boats and we're like, shit, this is like what we do in a boat. I haven't seen that before.
But like times 100, because it's way longer and bigger with multiple engines.
I'll take that as a compliment coming from you guys. I know the level you guys play at. It's amazing.
Was there a time in those early stages where, you know, you start building some stuff? Like you said, you had connections, you had that, you had some, you know, obviously ideas and thoughts and things you were going to do. Was there any one thing that you knew going in that you were going to have the leg up on, or you were going to, you know, achieve to get the leg up on, whether it be speed or feature integration or, you know, quality or all of it together or customer service? Was there something that you knew was missing in the industry that you're like, nobody's caught on to this, but I know what I'm going to do, and I'm fixing to kill it?
Not that I knew it was going to be successful, but I had an idea. But, you know, it takes us so much longer to build a boat. I mean, you know, our 50 is pushing 9,000 hours. Our 42 is almost 7,000 hours. Our competitors are building them in half the time. And I get it. If you want to do it that way, you can. But to do it to the level we're doing it, it just takes a lot longer. And that was a big gamble. You know, you don't know if it's going to pay back. Is it going to be successful? Because we're a different price point than most of them. And so it's not for the masses, for sure. But for the guys that want it right and want it 100% right, we're their guys, and we're willing to do whatever it takes. And I love it because our clients are the ones that push us to the next level. Just when you think you built the baddest thing you've ever built, the guy comes in and says, I want to do better. I want more. I want to do this. I want to do that. And we take it and run with it. We help them get their dream boat. And it really is. It's so cool when they come in and sit down. You start with drawings, you start with designs, you start with colors. And when they're done, it's truly their boat. And it's so cool. They always push us. That's probably my favorite part of the whole business.
Yeah, it seems like you've got a very loyal following. MTI guys, like, there's also seems kind of like that way with a lot of the boats. You've got like your camps, and you get your MTI, get your cigarette guys.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, your little, but it seems everybody like you guys gravitates. Do it. Yeah, you guys seem to do a phenomenal job of like cultivating that. You know,
I would say like every time you see an MTI for sale, it's in the description. New MTI coming in right. 2 months, got to sell the old one. So it's like you just kinda, the repeat guys is huge.
It's funny, but I can't tell you how many customers I have that pick their boat up and place an order for a new one because we're 2 years out. So they're like, 2 years from now, I need something. So they have so much fun with it that they'll go ahead and order another one almost as soon as they take delivery.
And how do you feel? Do you think that Mercury has played a big role in that? Because I look at your boats from the outside looking in, and I see like, all right, the 400R comes out, right? So everybody's got to have that. They got to have that boat. It's got 400Rs. Well, all of a sudden now there's the 450R. So I don't think guys are going to repower like a relatively new boat. They just say, fuck it, build me another one. Do the sales seem to work with the new motor debuts?
100% that works. And Mercury's really smart about it because what they'll do is they'll come out with some new size engine and you can't get it to repower your boat. There isn't enough to go around. So the only way to get it is to get another boat because they're holding back on the motors. Well, not holding back. They're just so busy they can't keep up. But yeah, so we sell a lot of boats when there's a model change on an engine program. And, you know, that's a good thing for us. But, you know, it's hard to repower all these guys that want them because I can't get motors. You only get rationed out so many engines and it's just barely, it doesn't even really keep up with demand because we want to build more boats. We're building more tooling. We're building more models. And, you know, we are in cap in hand saying, Mercury, can we please get some more motors? We got more boats coming. And, you know, it's, they're in a very enviable situation. They have all the cards.
That's wild.
And you're hanging five or six cards off the back of some of the center consoles.
We are.
Have you guys like capped like the beam width on how wide a 450R can be and how many?
Another 600, so you don't need as much beam.
Yeah, you get 4 600s. I can get 5 450s, and I'm sure Mercury's got something up their sleeve. There's going to be the next generation at some point, and it'll start over again. And we're already backed up for, like I say, close to 2 years on a lot of models. And it's going to be great when they come out with another one and everybody rotates again. And it's really cool because it gives the used boat market more to get. And that lets people get in sooner because there's a lot of people that can't wait 2 years. They want a boat and they want it now. And when a used one comes up, they don't last long.
How is that Mercury's reliability and performance helped the industry? I know back in the day when we were kind of in the 90s, early 2000s, it was the, you know, crazy 1,000 horsepower supercharged motors that blow up regularly and you're scared to death to buy anything.
Or it's a 2-stroke outboard.
Yeah. Right?
So they've done both. Mercury came out with probably 8 or 9 years ago, what they call a QC4. They're turbocharged, large block V8s, and they're an 1100, 1350 race fuel. You can go to 1550. And a real race boat, 1650. And they even built us some 1750s. Oh my God, are they crazy? But with each one, the life expectancy changes drastically. But for the consumer, the 1100, the 1350 was a game changer. It really put the pleasure back in performance boating, because you could run these things for hundreds of hours, 200, 300, 400 hours, depending on how you operate your boat. And when we had the earlier models from not only Mercury, but a lot of the other vendors, you couldn't get anywhere near that kind of timeline out of them. So it really made it user friendly. And the outboards, they're insane. I mean, you're talking a couple thousand hours, and that's a lot of boating. I mean, most boaters don't put 50 hours a year on them. You know, if they do a lot, they double that. But it's just really changed the game. They have gotten so reliable. And our 1100 horse on 89 octanes, 1100 horsepower, and we can get up to 3 years of warranty. You can go out and flog this thing for 2 years and sell it with a 1 year warranty. It's amazing.
That is something that's, our industry doesn't have that. Like, we have warranties on crate motors, but they're set up in such a way that they know that warranty expires before anybody can physically get that motor bolted into a car and on the road. But Mercury's, I mean, killed it with that. Even just being kind of casual boaters and, you know, experiencing what the evolution of that was from dealing with two-stroke outboards where you pull into a bar or a restaurant or something and you start them up and you smoke the entire place out and you're crossing your fingers that the damn things are going to start to, you know, and they're, it's just mind blowing what they've done.
Yeah, I was like, growing up, how many times you come home on one motor with dad and you're praying to get the other one to fire. And now it's just like, you don't even think about it. It's just going to
run. Their four cycle stuff, their V8 stuff, now V10 and V12 is amazing. I mean, it's so reliable. And they're getting it where it runs on lower and lower octane because it's hard to find premium anymore. I mean, on the water. And that's a challenge in itself. So this Rec 90 is about the going rate. And the 1350s really want 91, but the 1100s are happy as can be on Rec 90.
Oh, talking about the power a little bit, we deal with it in our industry, in our business. You know, a guy comes in and, he's made him some money and he's ready for a muscle car and he's hanging out with his buddies, whatever. And I mean, they told him 1,000 horsepower is what he needs, you know, so he thinks 1,200 is what he needs, you know. And there's obviously you talked about, you know, how drivable, you know, your 50V and all the way up to 57 and stuff like that. So it's a little easier, but how do you're dealing with a lot of repeat customers, and I don't want to go too far in the weeds, but how do you vet some of these guys where it's the guy that comes in, you know, and he's like, guess what? I just won the lotto. Like, right. And my buddy told me I needed the biggest, fastest, baddest ass MTI round, whatever. So put all the motors on the back. Like, how do you get him? Be like, all right, well, let's get you out on the water and get your feet wet and stuff like that.
He's probably just got a waiver for that. It's like, all right, we'll get you the 1650s here. Sign this.
All the above. Waiver on down. Yeah. But yeah, most of my customers, especially if they're new, the insurance company requires them to take some driving lessons. It's not near as involved as an airplane would be, or for example, but they at least have to go get some basics. And we tell them, look, don't go above this trim. Don't go above this speed. Just take your time and get to know this thing, because they are extremely fast. And the difference in you guys and us is, for us, the water's the final frontier.
Yeah.
Where can you run wide open?
Yeah, right.
It's the last place. And the difference in the car and the boat is, you can leave Miami and put it on the pegs and either make Key West or run out of gas before you lift.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's nothing else will live like that.
Right.
You know, I mean, the car guys can hold it wide open to straightaway, but they can't hold it wide open forever.
Right.
Yep.
It's hard on equipment. And Mercury has done an amazing job validating these things. And for what they put out and what they go through, it's absolutely amazing they live.
Do you think the racing world and all your experience in that has brought a lot to the pleasure boat side? And I guess vice versa, how do you go with the whole race on Sunday, sell on Monday motto in our industry from the old NASCAR days, right? You grew up with a racing background. How much of that has transferred over into the pleasure boats and the cat side? And
so I think it's huge, huge. And I've got customers that have sent me letters that have had the other brands, and they get one of ours and they're going, man, I can't believe the difference. I thought all cats were the same, and they're not. They're so much more user-friendly. We settled them down all the way back in Dubai so my guys could race and win that didn't have a ton of experience. So the control and the handling is so much better than our competitors. Once they go for a ride, if, you know, desire is easy. Wherewithal is a little tougher. But once they go for a ride, if they've got the ability, they sign up, they get on board, and they can use these things. And I believe the offshore racing is the best R&D program you can possibly have. I mean, Mercury and everybody else can run them around the circle at Lake X as long as they want to get them validated. But you don't know what's really going to happen until you go out and beat on this thing, because I got customers could screw up a crowbar in a sandbox.
we do have some of the same customers. Scott's not, you know, that guy, I mean? But yeah. Oh yeah.
You talked about it a little when I asked you earlier. You kind of had an idea of what you wanted to do. It was a gamble. You didn't know if it was going to work. At what point, you know, and I deduce from that, it's, you know, build the best you possibly can, no matter how much it costs, no matter how long it takes, right? It's going to be the best. And that if you're going to put your name on it, it's going to be the best. At what point in the history of the company did you start realizing, you're like, yeah, I think we might have the secret sauce, or I think we need to keep going this way. When did you validate your own dream or idea?
So it took me 20 years to become successful out of 25. The first 20 years, I mean, you are doing everything you can to pull it all together, make it all work, and they're baby steps. I mean, baby steps as you go. After about 20 years, it started to click, and we finally started to have a following large enough to grow and add more models and more stuff. But it's a long road, man. Jumping in and thinking it's going to happen in 3 years or 5 years, it's a dream. I wish you luck.
I think that needs to be said like over and over again with all the Instagram shit now.
Everybody wants things right now.
Instant, you're going to come up with a company and you're going to be 10X. You're going to make millions in year two and blah, blah, blah. But we went through the same
thing. They're not the boat business.
Or the car business.
Yeah. So you're grinding, you're grinding it out for 15, 20 years before you actually make something. But we went through the exact same thing. Something we get asked regularly. I kind of want to ask you, how do you keep the motivation to keep moving forward and keep your vision at the forefront without having all the instant success?
So, you know, I've been very lucky. I do what I love, and I love what I do. So, you know, you can't get paid enough for hours. You better like what you're doing. So I love it. The next model is the next challenge, and I love it. You know, we're working on the next one. When does this air?
It'll be probably middle of June.
Okay, so we're good. So we're going to announce a new 48, a new inboard model this weekend. It's going to be unveiled, the plans and the pictures and what have you. Awesome. And we'll start taking orders on our next large inboard cat. It's the next generation. We'll do the same on center consoles eventually. We just came out with our 50. It's killing it, and it's my wife's favorite. It's one of my favorites. It's just a home run. So we're always looking for that next level. And I'm going to try and get as much of that done as I can so that we're always on that leading edge. And I'm fortunate because my daughter is in the company, and she's very, very motivated and driven to replace me. And so that's cool, you know?
Yeah, but you can take that one of two ways.
Exactly.
Probably a little of both.
So she's racing one of our 39s in the 450 class, the 450 stock class. This is her third year. And I said, why do you want to go race? And she says, well, I want to learn about center gravity and propellers and the stuff you guys talk about. I don't get it. I said, okay, I hook, line, and sinker. I bought in. So she went to mom and says, mom, I want to build a race boat. I want to go racing. And of course, my wife's around me racing my whole life. She said, absolutely not. It ain't happening. So It sat quiet for a year. She came to me again. She says, Dad, I really want to go racing. And I said, why? And she told me again. And I said, you know what? I'm going to do it. We're going to do this. And we knew Mom was out. So just her and I had to make this plan. So we made a plan. She talks to one of the magazines that does the interviews and says, okay, we're going to go racing this year. And I'm going to race the 39. It's going to be a brand new class. We're going to start this 450 stock class because I raced back in the day in the 200 stock class, and it was great. And you could throw a blanket over everybody at turn one and probably close by turn four or five, you know, several laps in. So I thought it was a great class. So we decided we were going to do it. So she does the interview, and I said, do you think you should call Mom? Because she's in St. Louis, and her and I are in Florida. And she said, yeah, I probably should. So she calls Mom, and she says, Mom, I just want to let you know I'm going to go racing this year, and we're going to race the 450 class. And she says, no, you're not. She said, well, I am. And she said, honey, I run the company. You can't get a boat for 2 years. It ain't happening. She says, well, you know the one that says Dad's Demo? That's my new race boat. Are you shitting me? Hilarious. She had her on the speaker. So that didn't go over real good, but now Mom's a big fan.
Nice. For the record, since this is being recorded, I want to throw it out there that I want to learn about propellers and center of gravity as well. Just floating that out there.
Yeah, you go over there, you start at the beginning. You got to start sweeping floors, you know? Somebody's got to.
I can run a broom.
Always easier to ask for forgiveness than permission.
It sure
absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely. So I said, all right, we're going to do this. And Milton, I said, look, get a little trailer, get a truck. We're going to take a toolbox. That's it. So we're going to start off small. So next thing I know, he's buying a 48-foot trailer, putting all the spares in it and all this. And then he says, what do you think? And I said, well, it's good, but I want to look at the future. So we're going to offer a concierge service, you know. So if these guys want to race, and I got lots of customers, and so I talked to one of them. I said, what do you think? Would you be interested? He said, dude, if you can do this, you can supply the boat. I'll buy the boat. You handle the crew, you get it to the races, I jump in and go racing, I'm in. I just don't have it's on my bucket list. I don't have the ability. I don't know who to hire. I don't know how to get it there. I'm in. So this year we're going to have three of our boats on the valet service. We got one of them that's racing this year that's doing his own thing, which is fine. We'll help him any way we can. So we bought a big truck. We got a stuff full of parts. Everybody's going, and they're having a ball. These guys are getting to go racing and buying their boats, and we help them find a throttle man, and they're just killing it. It's that class is growing like wild, and I think it's going to be a cool deal.
That's awesome.
That is cool.
Phenomenal idea.
Yeah, that is a great. In your business model, did you have this vision from the get-go? Or, I mean, you've got a kind of a contagious personality. I mean, you seem like a very likable guy. Did your customer base just kind of like, were they drawn to you and you just like fed off of that to kind of keep this whole like kind of click together? Or did you go into this saying like, here's what we need to do. We need to like build this web, bring all these guys together. They're going to be customers for life. We're going to have a blast.
So we decided a long time ago that I wanted it to be like a big family. So I wanted everybody to be included. And I don't care. Bring your kids, bring your wife, bring your friends, everybody. So Taylor and Tim that used to work for me, we started a fun run. And in March, we do this appreciation fun run. They come down. We go out of Hall over in Miami. We go down to the Keys. We stay at Duck Key. And Hawks Cay is the resort. And I bring about, well, it started off with 6 boats and then 15 and then 30. And it's grown. So we cut it off at 50 boats. And it used to take, you know, a couple of months. You'd fill up the slots and you'd go down there. Now, in 2 hours, it's sold out and people are sending nasty grams. They didn't get to go. So we decided to do one in the fall and in New Year's and then one in the spring. So that's grown exponentially and it's packed every time. And it's such a cool way to get people interacting. They get to go boating in the Keys. You know how many people haven't boated in Florida in the Keys? It's amazing. It's the best boating in the world. And we boat all over the place. It's such a cool venue. We go out on day trips and go boating. And and everybody's included, you know, and I bring about 20 people, maybe a little more, just to take care of them, just to wash their boats, flush their boats. They hit the dock, go to the restaurant, go to the bar, go enjoy yourself. In the morning, their boats are wiped down. They're clean again. The dew is off of them. They're ready to go. And if they have a glitch or a starter or anything, my guys are changing it. They're fixing it. They're getting them going and keeping them going. And it's our favorite event of the year. And it's become the favorite event of our customers. So it's turned into almost a lifestyle that we incorporate with all of our customers. They love it. We love it. They get to use their boats. They meet new people. They make new friends. I got guys in California boating with guys in Florida. And, you know, we've got one this weekend. It's our 25th anniversary. So we've got a deal at Lake of the Ozarks. I've got 63 boats coming. I got 280 people coming. And they're flying in from Norway, from Europe, all over the place. They go, I can't bring my boat. Come on, we'll fit you in a boat. So I asked Taylor, I said, how many people have I invited that are going in my boat? She goes, 24 so far. I said, okay, we'll be fine. I got 63 boats. We'll figure out where to put them. They'll make new friends. It's just, it's so cool to see it happen.
That's wild.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we've admired that. I mean, we've tried to kind of replicate that, and we've done it on a small scale. In our industry, we've done some road tours, and the result, like the outcome, is exactly the same. And we've had some phenomenal customers, become great friends. And we try to treat it very much the same way, except it's small scale. So it's me, Phil, and Josh out there in the morning wiping the cars and trucks down, you know, and getting them filled up with gas. But it's a smaller group. But as we continue to grow, that's absolutely something we want to do. It's kind of like priceless.
It's such a different environment when you're working with friends that happen to be customers. It's just a completely different.
So cool.
Yeah, it's so cool. But on both ends of the spectrum, it's a way better experience for them. It's a way better experience for you. It's just all around.
Everyone lets their guard down, and you can be.
Yeah, you just got the trust and the fun and the. I mean, it's just you get to do things on both ends. The customers get to do things they never would have done any other way. You get to build cars that you never would have built any other way. You get to build boats that you would never build. You push. There's just the collaborative effort is so much greater than, you know, the business customer relationship.
Yeah. So I've got a place in Miami, a haulover, and Milton runs it. I've got a half a dozen guys down there full time, but in the winter now we'll have 50 boats in that place. And that's it. We have to stop. We can't take any more, but customers are using their boat year round now. So they're 6 months that they can use them in summertime is great, but now they ship them to Florida and they leave them with us and we white glove them and wash them and flush them and charge them and do everything. They come in, they jump in the boat, they go boating in the Keys. They come back, they go, we'll see you next week. Or we're going to the bar or the restaurant. We'll be out in the morning. We'll have it ready. It's good to go. So it's really changed the way my clients can go boating and made it year round. So I think it's a win-win for them, for us, for everybody. And, you know, you don't have to just use your boat 3 months or 4 months a year.
And that's probably the biggest barrier to entry on the boating side is all the getting it out in the water, set up, ready to roll, and then putting it away at the end of the day. That's right. An hour before, an hour after to alleviate it's that a, headache is huge.
It's a job when you've been in salt water. It's two or 3 hours washing and flushing and cleaning and keeping it nice. And who wants to do that after boating all day?
Right.
Everybody's like, you need a big house down here with a dock. I said, I don't want a dock.
Too much damn work.
I want somebody else to do it. I'll be there at 8 a.m. It's in the water. It's ready to go. I'm happy.
You've been doing this for a long time. You're an old school guy. You come from the performance background. You're doing a lot of these pleasure boats. There has to be things that as it's evolved and the customer's tastes have evolved and trends have changed of features and stuff that need to be integrated in these pleasure boats or that customers are asking that you're shaking your head like, why in the hell are we putting this in there? What are some of those things? And then what are the some of those things that after a few years or you're going out and you're enjoying, you're like, yeah, that's a pretty good idea. I mean, we should have done that sooner.
So I've got those customers for sure. And one of them's like, well, I want all my speakers lit. I want them all playing the music. I want Starlight Headliner. I want this, that, and the other. I'm like, really, dude? So we went out in the boat, one of my customers with them, and they're playing music. We've had dinner. Everybody's relaxed and having a good time, just going back home at, you know, idling almost. And we're riding back and they're playing music. And I'm like, you know, this is pretty cool. I was surprised. So I got another one of them that says, look, I had 40 speakers in my boat last time. I want a bigger stereo. I'm like, dude, what are you thinking? He goes, oh, I want more, way more. And I'm like, what are you thinking? He goes, can we do 100? I said, no, we cannot. There won't be any boat left.
Yeah, and the boat won't do 100 either by the time you get done with all those speakers.
Have a trailer with speakers.
So his new boat's being built with 72 speakers. I don't know how many of those are subwoofers, but total, 72 of them. And he's like, okay, I want a fog machine. I want, and the list goes on and on. I'm like, you've lost your mind. But we're going to do it. Another customer said, I heard he's getting this, this, and this. And I'm like, yeah, I want that. Put it on my boat. I'm like, it's how it evolves. It's crazy. Cool. Fun. But I would have never done that.
But it's no, nice. No telescoping brass poles or anything like that.
I'm sure there's been one. Guaranteed.
I've had the request, but we haven't gone there yet.
I think you just go with some old school two strokes on the back, and then you got your fog machine there you built go. In.
Yes, built in smoker.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've looked at them. It's funny, as I feel like I'm getting old now, because me and my brother Phil, we messed around with some center console stuff and got some go fast boats, but yeah, I always looked at like a Bimini top, right? And you're like, fuck that, like. I want to go fast, right? And now I'm like, man, a cat would be really cool. But with the kids and the man sitting at the sandbar, I wonder if they could put a Bimini top on that. And then I'd be that guy, you know, with the
full canopy boat.
That goes on. We have it on our cats, that, and when we hit the sandbar, everybody pops them up. They're great. But that's why I spend a lot of time in a center console now, because I've had my face peeled off three times now. And they're like, you can't go in the sun. It's my business. I cannot not go in the sun. You know?
Right.
Sunscreen, a hat. So I'm wearing a new hat, and it's a pain in the ass, but I like a shade. I like a roof.
Yeah.
I get it 100%. Are you guys busy this weekend? You want to come join us?
Where are you going to be at?
Lake of the Ozarks. We're having our 25th anniversary.
That's right. Man, I don't know. What have we got this weekend? Other than a son's got a little skateboarding competition that I'll be at. But other than that, yeah, wide open.
I mean, he's gonna skateboard again.
Right. Yeah, my wife can video. They've got Zoom and all. We're on Zoom right now. I guess we are supposed to be going down there right next. Yeah, about 2 weeks.
Yeah,
yeah. We're bringing a couple of Scott's cars down to Omaha, over to Omaha, Nebraska, and I guess we're gonna detour down to the Ozarks. And I think he's got a 48 MTI.
He does. Yep. Yeah, you'll like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so we've had the pleasure of, Scott's an awesome dude, but we've had the pleasure of running some of his, but he actually let me run his 39 with 450s, and we ripped that thing from Hall over down to Gilbert's in the Keys, and man, what an amazing experience.
Is that a blast or what?
It's unbelievable. You know, I've been around boats my whole life, never cat boats, right? So I always had this, like, right. Kind of preconceived notion that these things, of how they would work, right? Like, it's going to ride rough. It's going to beat you to death. And you can't probably really turn it. Like, you look at the boat and you just kind of, like, in your head, you think it's
like
going to...
a pontoon boat's going to go
straight. Exactly, right? And I was blown away at when the way that boat performs. I mean, it's a damn sports car on the water. And I would have never thought that. But that thing is so hooked up and connected, and you feel... just so in control of it, but it just soaks everything.
So I mean,
in a 1-2 foot chop, it just soaks it up, and man, just absolutely mind blown. I'm always disappointed, like when you see things your whole life, right? And you're like, you put it on a pedestal and you're like, oh, it's gonna be fucking awesome. And then you get around to using it, sucks, right? This was totally the opposite. I figured I'd be like, I never want a cat. You know, this is fuck it. But I'm like,
change your mind.
Yeah, we were on Boat Trader that afternoon. Yeah.
Looking for the used ones. Right? Looking for the guy who's upgrading to the 450s.
You know, we went down there with Scott and he's like, oh, we'll go out to lunch. We'll run down to Gilbert. So we've had our parents at a house in the Keys since I was a year old, and we're going out of Hall over. We're like, dude, that's pretty fucking far. He's like, no, we'll be there in an hour. No, we won't. That's a 3-hour drive, at least.
Or
yeah.
less.
Yeah.
We that was when he had the 48 with the 1350s in it. We were doing 162 miles an hour, and I think we made it there in like 35 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, it's so cool. Shit. I love it.
And just at 162 miles an hour, like, I'm taking pictures of the dash. We're talking to each other back and forth.
Having a conversation.
Yeah. 60 miles an hour on a V-bottom that we've always been in is, it's hairy. You're holding on.
Right.
And here you're just hanging out doing a buck 60.
Texting.
It was insane.
It's wild, man. It's just crazy.
Well, it speaks to what you said, though, you know, how you engineered those boats for, you know, basically rookie drivers. I mean, I got behind the wheel of it. I mean, Scott was throttling the boat, but it's like, man, I mean, really, if you're somewhat intelligent, not reckless, it's pretty straightforward, at least the outboard boat, to run at a reasonable pace and feel like you're in control.
Exactly. If you just listen to it, it'll tell you what it wants. It'll be fine. You know, my biggest fear is Captain Budweiser. You know, that's the probably the same in your business.
Oh yeah.
We don't have to worry about the whole Budweiser or Bud Light anymore. It's Captain Miller Light now.
I think dropped an ad today.
Yeah, that came apart today.
Yeah, dropped one today. Yeah.
Really? Right. So it's no beer safe. It's
Captain Coors Light right now.
Yeah. Captain Coors Light?
Right. Yeah. Coors is the last of the Mohicans.
Natty will be around forever.
There you go.
Yeah.
How much do the cats like rise out of the water when they start packing air and come up? Because it feels like when you're getting up to speed, you almost feel like you're on an elevator coming from the V boat or the V hole world. Like it just keeps rising, and it's just smooth. It almost feels like you're on a hydrofoil.
It is. It picks it up and it rides on the air. So it has a compression in the tunnel that picks it up. So you're running on the last probably 10 foot of the boat, and in modest, you know, 1 to 2s, it just clips the top. It doesn't like a V bottom takes hydrodynamics. So you only hold it up by the water. So when the water goes away, it falls. It hits the next one. On a catch, you've got half of it in the air. So you glide from one to the other. So you don't hit the bottom of those 2 footers. You just clip the last 8 or 10 inches. So it feels like it's much less wave conditions than it would in a V bottom. So the ride is incredible. I mean, that's why they do such a good job, and people that have them love them.
And so for the guys listening that are predominantly an automotive, you know, listener base that are saying like, well, that's not a 4-link, or that's not a, you know, a triangulated 3-link, or that ain't no 12-volt.
Right.
To the layman, how does a true tunnel hole boat work? What is the layout? Because when you look at the picture that's right behind you, I mean, it just looks like a big ass boat.
The top side.
Big ass boat with 2 pointy things sticking out of the front of it. That's pretty wide. So how does it work?
So we have a very narrow V bottom cut in half and spread out, and we're carrying over 50% of the weight in the tunnel and in the compression of the air. So it is much more agile. And in a V bottom, you're basically trying to balance this triangle as you go through the water. On a cat, you've got this almost tabletop, you know, you've got a much wider stance, so it's much more controlled. And to put it in layman's terms, it's like running across the Baja with a Corvette or a Raptor or a TRX with some suspension. It just soaks it up. It just goes across it, and you don't even feel it. Where the center or the V bottom, you know, you're literally relying only on the waves. So the bigger the waves, the harder it hits. And it's just a completely different feel and ride. And like you say, it's, in my opinion, they're the sports car of the marine world. They really are. They're agile, they're fast, they control well. And you know, we used to say the Ferrari of the waterways, but that's probably not the right term. But it really is sports car-like as opposed to car-like.
Does that
make sense?
Yeah, makes perfect sense. But so when was like the changing of the guards on that? Because, you know, when I grew up, you know, as a kid in the 80s, 90s, and there were, you know, big chicks with blonde perms and Budweiser bikinis, and there were 41, 47 Apaches just terrorizing the offshore world. And then there were a few cats, and they're always like, well, it's rough water. These, you know, the Apaches are going to crush it today. And now, like, you know, V-holes, I mean, you almost don't really see them performing in the offshore. world, like, where did that switch where they're like,
Popeyes came into play?
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, there was a lot of big ones there, but for sure the cats have gotten better and better in rough water. The stability is better than it used to be. And the beet bottoms just aren't competitive anymore. You know, they're you still have to use all that horsepower to push it through the water, where on the catamaran, you literally pick it up out of the water and it takes very little horsepower once you're up and running. You know, the thing that slows you down is usually the engine RPM. You can't get a big enough propeller, but it gets less and less drag as it goes faster and faster and transfers to aerodynamics instead of hydrodynamics. And air's 800 times less drag than water. So it doesn't take a whole lot of it to make a huge difference.
Wow. Oh, we want to be respectful of your time. We got some of the standard questions that we ask every single guest. This will be fun for the boating world side of things. We usually ask, what was the very first car that you ever owned and a story about that car? But we got also to ask the same thing, you know, the very first boat and a story about that boat. You choose car or boat. First one and the story about that vehicle.
SS-176 Glastron. That was my first boat, the first one I bought. I went out to the river with it. I had a 115 on it. I thought it was a great boat. I went out and ran it. Some guy come ripping by me in a little tunnel hole, a blue one, and he outran me. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to go get a bigger motor. So I went back to the dealer and I said, what's the biggest motor you can put on this thing? He said, well, I can put a 175 on it, a V6 Mercury. I said, all right, let's do that. So I put that on. I went back out to the river. I found this guy. He freaking smoked me again. I'm like, well, this sucks. So I went back to the dealership. I said, okay, now what do you got? What's this one over here? So he had a 20-foot Vulture HydroStream. And I said, how big a motor can you put on that? Do you guys have any idea what a HydroStream is?
It's like a little tunnel hole, right?
No, it's a V-bottom. But it's got a hook nose on it, and it's really shallow and a pad on the bottom. And I said, okay, I'll take it. How big a motor can we do? And he said, a 225. I said, okay. I went back out to the river. I found this guy, and I dusted him. I'm like, yes, I got it. We're good. So that was my first boating experience. So then I went and, you start looking at what he can do, what you can't do. So I found Land and Sea. He had a nitrous kit. So I put nitrous on it, and this was way back. So nitrous wasn't even a thing back then. So I put that on there, put it in the back so nobody could see it. And all of a sudden there was more guys showing up with different boats, and we'd go out and run them off. And these guys with 17-foot HydroStreams, 18-footers, Vikings, all the different ones. And I'd go out there and I'd just blast them because nobody had a clue I had nitrous. And, it was a blast. I had a lot of fun in that boat. Then I ended up buying another one, another one, another one. So that's how my boating story got started.
Probably bought a lot of powerheads with all that nitrous, didn't you?
It was actually pretty reliable.
Really?
I did good. I did really good. Yeah. Huh. I don't think it was near as much as they are now as far as power, but
yeah,
it worked well.
Yeah, that is cool.
That's awesome.
Was there anybody back in that day? I'll let you get back at it, Josh. But was there anybody back in that day, like when you got started, was there like an industry icon, somebody who you looked at that kind of like idolized, that maybe paved your path? Or
so when I went boat racing, which was a few years later, I had a 24-foot skater with 200s on stock class. And I had Bobby Kaiser and Al Copeland. Those guys were walking around with poor sunglasses and pretty women on each arm. I'm like, holy shit, someday, wouldn't that be cool?
Yes.
It was really cool. Those were my idols.
Huh. Yeah, the hot rod industry, man, doesn't, like, we've got, like, Boyd Coddington was cool, but he was just like an overweight dude that made wheels.
We don't have near the stories that they have.
Yeah.
No. Best piece of advice that you've ever received?
Wow. Let me think about that one for a second.
We got all the time in the world. Think about it.
Pour another round while you're pondering.
So what are you guys drinking there?
Well, we've got quite the selection behind us, but we've selected, it's a chicken cock 8-year double oak, it's called. So something.
Excuse
kinda,
me?
Yeah. Yeah. I know, it's, yeah,
he the, said, he, said it yeah. one more time.
Yeah. Chicken no, cock. Right? It's, yeah, it's like a very, very old brand. Kind of a tough one to find, but yeah, it's
a little different.
Yeah.
Something we try to go to something new every episode, but, and it's getting the more episodes we do, it's getting harder and harder to go to something new.
There's a Blanton's sitting back there that's just about empty, so that's a go-to.
Yeah, there's lots back there.
We like that. I don't know what the best advice I ever had was. You know,
if you've never received any good advice, then that's an absolute answer.
You are 100% self-driven. Well, then give some, man,
or spin off into the other kind of next one that usually follows up. If you can go back in time and give yourself a piece of advice, what would that be?
That's cool.
I wouldn't change a thing.
Awesome.
Not one. I mean, I have been so fortunate from my history to the families to everything. I mean, don't get in over your head, man. Run as hard as you can, but at your pace. Don't get in over your head.
That's good.
I think I would have, you know, now that the laws have changed, we'd start running square grouper a little earlier in time now that they've changed a lot of those laws.
That's what you would tell yourself?
Probably, yeah.
It's kind of the problem. Funny because it's the problem with cats. You can't fit much in the hole.
It changes things.
Yeah,
they can put the logo on the side of the boat and it's a write-off.
Right?
We are talking to one now. Yeah. 100% legal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that whole like forward section of those holes, there's no cabin. It's just useless space, right? What are you going to put fucking speakers up there?
The one dude was 72.
He was in Dubai when all that was going down.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Very first car that you ever had, and a story about that car.
64 Ford Fairlane, 3 on the tree. How bad was that?
Yeah.
It was the first one. I was happy. I got some big tires and wheels. I cut the fenders out and put them under there. It was the dumbest thing I ever did, but it was great.
Nice.
We usually ask what your favorite car movie and why is, and you sound like a car guy too. So yeah, we'll ask you the same thing, but has there been any boat movies?
Yeah, there's been a few really, like bad ones, but there was a series. What was the series called? Remember with Hulk Hogan back in the 90s?
Thunder in Paradise.
Yes. Thunder in Paradise. Yeah, I'm going to answer that for you because it's an awesome show. No, but there's been a handful of boat movies, right?
I think Miami Vice.
Yeah. Miami Vice was the one that we were involved in. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. There was another one in the late 80s.
What'd y'all do with Miami Vice?
We supplied the boat that the Colin Farrell and
Jamie
were in. Yeah, that was our boat. And we had to make a roof that slid back so they could stand up, and we had to do the race scenes. And we had, oh, I don't know, 6 or 8 boats down there for the filming. And
that's
it
iconic.
Was pretty cool. Yeah, for sure.
That's a great piece. I learned something.
Yeah. Now.
That's fucking rare. Cool.
That is very cool. Yeah.
There was another movie. I think it was called Thunderboat Row. It was in like the late 80s, early 90s. Like the first time there was a canopy boat. I've Googled it a couple times. I could have the name wrong, but it was probably a made-for-TV movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's ringing a bell.
Does that sound right? You might know more than me.
Yeah, there was one made. Yeah.
Okay.
So we get you're dropping some new products. The new 48 you're talking about. So guys can follow you at marinetechnology.com, marinetechnologyinc.com, and MTI Boats. Your daughter's running the Instagram, right? She's bringing you into the, a lot of PR.
The 20th century. She's bringing me in the 20th century. It's kind
of
cool.
Nice. And you've got, there's a 44 outboard that just hit recently, right?
It is. That's our one of our newest models. It's a home run. It's been received extremely well. We're happy with the way it runs. It's an amazing boat. You guys got to go for a ride.
Yeah, I would.
Maybe when you get to the lake, look us up.
I'm going to sound like a novice. And they did a 39 and a 42, right, in the outboard?
Well, there was a 34, 39, and now you get the
44. So we did a 34 outboard cat, then we did a 39, and now we've done a 44 outboard cat. The V-bottoms are 42, 50, and 57.
How does the 4 foot change the driving experience in that?
It's just a little bit like daylight and dark.
Oh, okay.
It's wow. Amazing.
Night and day.
They are blown away. My 34 guys are shocked when they get in the 39. And the same with the 39 when they go to the 44. I didn't expect as big a change as we got from 34 to 39. And I surely didn't expect it in the 44, but it is absolutely amazing.
Is it just in the like rough water? But if you're running in flat water, can you feel the difference in those boats, or is it similar?
So all three of them will run exact same speed.
Wow.
That's going to be my question. How much amazing. Do you lose? But it's got to be a lot of weight difference in 6 feet, 8 feet.
Yeah, there is some weight difference, but we compensated for what we did on the boat. So it runs incredible for the size. And everybody said, it's too big. It'll never run for 450s. It'll never run right. The thing runs 130 plus with two 450s in a 44-foot boat. It's unheard of.
Damn, that's pretty awesome.
Wow.
There's a pretty good chance there might be something new coming. So it's going to be the perfect boat.
Hmm. Oh, that's a big statement.
That is. Well, I've been holding out.
We're waiting for the perfect
you're
one.
Ready? Now you're ready.
Yeah, now is the time, right?
I need to quit these things.
We might.
I'm thinking like a dash RS after the number.
Yeah.
That could be cool. Yeah. Randy, it's been fun, man. If you're ever in the Chicago area, come by and see us. I'd love to show you around the shop. To. Absolutely. We'll look you up if we're at the lake here or down in Florida as well. Come by and see you.
Yeah, we're right in Duck Key. Great. So.
In 2 weeks, I'm probably going to be out of town, but they can hook you up with Taylor and Sean. They'd love to take you for a ride, anything you want, if you're at the lake.
Well, that would be fantastic.
Let's do it.
I would take you up on that.
Appreciate it, man.
Well, gentlemen.
Thanks, Thank Randy. You. It's been awesome. Cheers.
Cheers.
Take care.
Okay.
Off the record, are you ever going to do a cat center console? I know like Freeman, Invincible, all those guys are getting into it in the fishing world.
I've had several guys ask me. I just don't know that it makes a lot of sense at this time. We're backed up for a couple of years and I'm just not the fishing guy. You know, I'm
sure
I could do one, but I'm not sure how well it would be received for my clientele. For the fishing guys, they'd kill it. They'd love it.
Well, I'm even thinking just those guys up. The family cruiser, the functionality, the wider beam and all that extra deck space.
Yeah.
In the center console.
It's on down the line if we do it, but I've got a couple other projects that are higher priority at this time. Off the record.
Off the record.
Can't wait to see
edit all this part out. All this is edited out.
Okay.
Awesome. Appreciate it.
I sure appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Randy. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Thank you. A whiskey review is where we review whiskey.
I assume all the listeners at home would appreciate that explanation.
Must have spilled mine or something.
Sometimes the glasses have holes in the bottom. Just a little bit.
What a cool bottle.
Super.
Yeah. Awesome, cool.
You look so cool doing it.
Bottle's cool.
No, it's a compliment.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm sure.
Appreciate it, Josh.
And we're doodling. Are you writing the word doodle?
No, I'm writing chicken cock, actually.
Are you getting ready to document the...
Yeah, you gotta...
The review?
Double oak. 8 years. That is a 92 proof. Chicken cock, double oak, Kentucky whiskey. 92 proof. For... I think
I didn't fuck with anything.
Camera one, camera two.
Now I think we've got it fixed now. Look at that.
Oh, look at there's you.
There's the bottle. Chicken Cock, Double Oak, Kentucky Whiskey. Aged 8 years. The famous old brand.
That's what
not
they
say. Not to be confused with the old brand. This is the famous old brand.
One. Or the new brand.
Yeah. 92 proof.
The bottle,
great bottle.
Hey, the bottle sells.
Great
the,
bottle.
I'll just say that. The bottle's great. I came across this stuff years ago. I think I've got like a 10-year or something. It's hard to find. They recently made it a little more mainstream with just their...
That's the regular bluish one. Turquoise yeah. one looking one?
Yeah, it doesn't have all the like super cool shit going on the bottle, and it doesn't have this cool little
shot glass
on the top.
Yeah.
Bottle sells it. I'll be honest, I was super stoked when this came out. I actually...
Because everybody knows Jerry here
stop
is
it.
A fan.
Stop it, Philip.
Of the chicken.
Your guy. Mother's listening to this.
I right? doubt it.
Yeah.
Is it just the chicken version? I'm sorry.
about a fucking nut. You just.
I'm sorry. It was. Dude, you cannot toss softballs around here. And
I'm trying to give a fucking review here.
Give it.
Guy loves the chicken cock.
No, you guys, go ahead.
No, it's been one of your favorites. What is the review?
Son of a bitch. I'm done. Dude, I'm done for tonight. I'm signing off.
Out of all the chicken cocks, what would you rate? Out of you've had all the chicken.
I'm signing off.
You just talked about you found it years ago.
Yeah, it's
you've
fine. Had, it's fine. Just
you've had
it.
All of them.
If you see it, get it, whatever.
Where would like, where would you one. Rate this one?
He's like
out of the ones years. That you've had.
Nope.
I can't say it any more plainly than I've said it.
It's a great bottle, dude. I'm just going to leave it at that.
It's a great bottle. I love it.
Yeah.
Out of all the chicken cocks that you've had, where would you rate this chicken cock?
Josh also loves it.
This. You're the one that's making it weird.
Stop it.
I like this chicken cock.
I'll bet you do.
I'm willing to rate this.
What was it that you liked? Was it the mouthfeel?
Or was it the taste? Is none of this has been a hair. No,
this entire review.
Oh, some of it. Yeah. The funny parts about you. That okay. part will air. Yeah.
Yeah. That came out of nowhere.
Yeah. Well, now to get serious with you now, it's a cool brand because it's old. All right. You know, read their story. Mm-hmm. Go on their website. There's a lot of information on there. Man, I actually seek this out. I bought a bottle from them years ago, a 10-year, and it subscribed me. To their email, little monthly mailer deal. So I saw that came out and I'm like, wow, I won't be able to get this anywhere. So I ordered it, right? Came to the house, put it on the shelf in the collection. Later, saw it on the shelf at a local liquor store, snagged it. Phil also did the same.
I did.
Brought this bottle in. Super stoked. Let's crack it open, get into it. I'm not crazy about it. Are you?
I'm not. I got a bad taste in my mouth today. So I don't know if I'm the best reviewer, but. I didn't like it all that much.
I think the flavor is good. I wish it was not as alcohol forward up front.
Yeah.
I do. I think maybe it's because we did the blind tasting earlier, whatever, in a different kind of flavor profile.
It just, you wouldn't think it's an 8-year and I don't want to get weird with like throwing out like all sorts of weirdo whiskey review things, but it almost got like a licorice.
It's got a cinnamon, Christmas spice type
something
feel.
That's just overpowering.
Yeah. Like maybe a star anise. Something.
I don't know what
I actually
that is.
Know what that is.
So. I'm going to take that as disrespect, though. I don't know what it is.
What's your rating?
I'm going to give it a...
Whoa.
They could go 6 or 7.
Just to kind of go along with that theme here, I'm going it's a 6.
No, stop. I knew it. What are you gonna give?
Are you on top?
So you're gonna give a chicken cock a 69? Is what you're saying?
No,
you're gonna go to.
I honestly, I don't love. It. I'm going 6.8. I'm gonna keep it clean, but it's 6.8.
Say any all you want.
It's a 6.8.
Well played. Well played.
What are you gonna give it, Phil?
I'm gonna go a 6.5 with an asterisk.
What's the asterisk for?
Just not tasting good whiskey today. I don't know.
6.5 star.
Star.
Phil has bad taste
different
today.
Oh, we've talked about this before. Like you drink bourbon, you're like, this is horrible today.
No, I get that. And you do that I get that with wine and beer. Like you drink wine, that's like your favorite
even the
wine.
Shit that you like.
Yeah, and then you drink it one day and you're like, oh, what the fuck? This is nasty. Yeah, that is that's a thing.
Supposed to cleanse your palate with applesauce.
That's a lie.
No, it's true. Look it up.
Sorbet. And applesauce? Applesauce flavored sorbet.
Oh, applesauce is Alabama sorbet. So
it's fancy down there.
Yeah, it's a fancy applesauce. I'm gonna give it I'm gonna give it a 7-0. I like the flavor. Yeah. I can get past honestly. This with a single ice cube.
You're probably right.
Probably be very, very good.
I'll bet you're right.
Yeah.
Okay, that in a different bottle.
Not buying it. That in that bottle, buy it. Right?
Just throw it on the shelf.
Yeah. It looks cool.
But you can only see it by the bottle.
It's a conversation piece. It's a great bottle. You'll have something that probably nobody else will. Mm-hmm. And if you want
it makes the wives giggle too when they see it.
What's the name?
Cock. Thanks for listening to Oil and Whiskey,
children,
an Ironclad original. If you like the show, be sure to leave a rating and review. Check out our brand new oil. It's not brand new anymore, but new. It's still
new-ish
Oil and Whiskey YouTube channel. And
cool behind the scenes.
Yep.
A little more deeper dive into some of the stuff we've touched on.
Bringing the content.
Bringing it.
Yep. Daily postings.
Knives, EDC, whiskey, stupid shit we've said that didn't make the error.
And edited videos at our expense that we don't know are being posted.
Yeah, I got one of those today.
It's kind
of
cool.
I did as well.
I liked that one.
Did you?
Yeah.
That's Josh fine. Has a Ford too. He's at a Ford
anytime,
longer than me.
Anytime I can.
I'm in there.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
Not the one that I saw.
It's the only video we posted.
Yeah, both of you are on it. Anytime I can laugh at your
Did you only
expense?
Watch the first half?
I enjoy it.
So you only watched the part that you were in.
No,
you didn't
even
watch the part that I was in.
I want to capitalize on this.
That's honestly a little fucked up that you only watched your part of the video.
I feel like I watched it through twice and it was just me.
Oh, it's you and Josh. It's both of you.
Yeah.
With your Ford Raptors and with your little Raptor Club.
Were you in the video?
No, because I'm
That's
not
right,
part of,
you weren't.
I'm not part of the Raptor Club.
Right.
Apparently,
lucky for you, they just dropped the Ranger Raptor.
Lucky for me, I'm the one driving the fucking legend truck, bitches. I'm the one with the badass square body while you guys are riding around in your little fluffy fucking Baja trucks, wannabe Baja trucks.
Baja certified.
Yeah.
There's a sticker.
Yeah.
Baja certified.
License. Right. Thanks again to our guest, Randy Schism. We'll see you again next week.